Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Francois Jarry.
When I cross the finish line, I just start walking, and then I'm like, oh my God, if I'd started walking earlier, I would not have finished.
Yeah.
Because your legs become cement.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. And then I had to, like, my mom drove me home, and I was just like lying in the bed. I was like, oh, I'm dead. But it was so much fun, like crossing the finish line, having done the time.
On this episode of The Rundown, I got to speak with strength and conditioning coach, spinning instructor, and marathoner, Val Pointer. Looking at her now, you'd see a healthy, strong, and powerful woman. But it wasn't always that way. Like many, Val faced a troubled past with substance abuse and an eating disorder, but eventually she turned her life around. Find out how she lifted up from rock bottom and is now on the top of her game, motivating everyone around her in the fitness community. Her story is nothing short of inspiring. Hope you enjoy it. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, I'd like to tell you about a trail running podcast that I host called Free Your Wild by the Ultra Trail Huracana event. The latest episode will air April 2nd, featuring Luca Manfredi, who is an ultra runner from Italy. We discuss his passion for the mountains and how he's handling the COVID lockdown in his region. So if you're interested in trail running, check out the Free Your Wild podcast and subscribe. I'd also like to share some important news about The Rundown and what we are currently doing to stay connected with the community. Every day we're doing an Instagram Live with a former guest on the show. We catch up on what they've been up to since the interview and how they are navigating the current global situation and how it's affecting their daily lives. So make sure to tune in and ask your questions to each one of our guests. We sure do appreciate it. In addition, we've decided that in order to continue the podcast, we have to respect social distancing and start doing our interviews remotely. This is something we were concerned about in the past because we want to keep the highest standard of audio quality for our listeners. With that said, we are happy to present our second ever remote podcast with this episode featuring Valerie Pointer. So please rate us on iTunes and leave us your feedback. We always appreciate it, and it's the only way we'll get better. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. In running, the importance of cross training is so key in training and in being able to carry on in the longevity of the sport and staying injury free. And nobody's taught me this better than my next guest. She's also my girlfriend, Valerie Pointer. So welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, you?
Good. I've been actually wanted to have you on the show for a while now. And you know, this seems to be a perfect opportunity with everything going on in the world and the fact that we're cooped up at home. And I know that some of your followers too have been asked or have asked you when you'll get in, when I was going to interview you on the show. So here's our chance. Now you can tell them.
I think, everybody's really excited to hear my story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know when we first started talking, it was something that really stood out to me in hearing your story and how inspiring and motivating you actually are in the community and in all you do with this. You do spinning and you do coach at Orange Theory as well. So you do a little bit of everything and your running goals too. So I'd like to like dissect that with you a little bit more and dive deep, which I don't know if we've really got a a chance to really do that until this point, but
I don't think so. For it.
So before I get started, or so we can get started, I always touch base and see like, how was your upbringing and were you an active kid growing up?
My like childhood, teenage, time was not very an active time for me. The only like physical activity I've done when I was younger, from probably the age of like 10 to, maybe 18 to 19, was dancing. I did competitive dancing in dance hall, hip hop. But that was pretty much all I did back then, which was quite a lot because I did have to commit quite a bit of time. But yeah, I think my dad always wanted me to be a little bit more active. My sister, was really big in like horseback riding. She did provincial competition. He tried to get her into like soccer and stuff, but I kind of rebelled against all of that. So early in I think I was 14, 15 years old. I guess I associate myself with the wrong people in my life at that point. So I got into some pretty heavy drugs quite early in my teenage time, which lasted to my early 20s. And I also suffered from a pretty bad eating disorder, which caused me to get myself checked into the hospital a couple times because I just didn't have the strength to kind of get out of the house or even go down the stairs from my apartment building. So I guess I wasn't really active. I didn't really know how to take care of myself. I was pretty, I think I took very terrible care of my body, physical and mental health at that point in my life. So I think that's pretty much like an overview of what my upbringing was when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. And in the moment when you were in that place, did you, looking back, was there like key decisions that you made that put you in that position? Is there things you could have done differently even from a young age, or do you find that it was hard to see?
I guess at that point, I didn't really see it. It came to a point where I almost didn't finish high school. So I think at that point, I realized that I had to kind of take my life under control. My parents, like I was pretty open with my parents, parts of my family, I guess. So I guess I had the support and I knew if I needed help, if I wanted it, I could reach out to my family. It did come a little later. So like before I finished high school, my last year of high school, I decided to kind of clean up and take better care of myself and maybe reducing the amount of drugs I was doing. Unfortunately, like I wasn't, I was never into like the normal kind of things. I guess when people are in high school, they kind of try to smoke weed. And I kind of jumped in and did like some pretty heavier stuff. And I think my last year of high school, we had like a 5-kilometer run that we had to do. It was part of the school program. And I like committed myself to clean up and try to finish that with success. Like I just wanted to do it for myself. And I think that for me was a big like point. It didn't really last for very long, but I think that was the first time that I was like, okay, like if I want to do this 5-kilometer run, I'm going to need to clean up. You know, I can't do both. So I think it was like a 4 months that I really like took care of myself. But I guess it just went back to normal afterwards. But I did end up changing groups of friends at one point. I moved away from where I grew up and moved into the city. So I think I had different points in my life where I was like, okay, let's commit to doing something better for yourself. And then it kind of went back to normal. It's only till my early 20s, maybe 22, 23, that I decided really to clean up. And that was really for mental health issues because my body was starting to shut down. I was having some pretty bad anxiety, panic attack. I was unable to work for 6 months. So it was really, I think that was the biggest turning point for me.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, do you feel like that was the turning point, or is there a moment that you can look back on where you're like, that was the moment when I said like, okay, enough's enough. Like, let's get out of this. Cause a lot of time you hear, the term rock bottom.
Yeah.
Was that that moment for you, or was it something else?
My rock bottom, I think I had two. I must have been about, I think I was 20. I was with a partner, just started dating this person, and that person was quite active. And I don't know how we ended up together at that point, because I was like a walking bomb. At that point, I was probably at my lowest weight. Like, I was in and out of not being able to show up to school. Like, I reached a point where I was under 80 pounds. So it was like, it was not good for that. And I was also using at that point. But this person really made me realize like how terrible I was taking care of myself. And that person was very supportive and kind of doing its own thing, was going on hikes and traveling, towards like going hiking and in Peru and like doing things that like, I was like, wow, I really wish I could do that. But like, I couldn't even get on the plane at that point, you know? And I think that for me made me realize that I had it hit my first rock bottom. Mm-hmm. So I think that was my first one. At that point, I cleaned up, in terms of like my eating disorder. Like, I was trying to follow like a nutritional plan from a nutritionist. Like, I was going and talking to people to get help. And like, that person was really supportive throughout this whole process. But I don't think at that point I was doing it for myself, and I was doing it for that person. Mm-hmm. And then we did end up using together at one point for a while. So that didn't help that side of me. So I actually ended up moving away to Vancouver. And that's at that point that I got back to my normal habits. I started struggling with my eating disorder again. And I met some people there in Vancouver. And the first friends I had made were in the party scene. And I was out using pretty much like 4 times a week. So I think I thought moving away was going to help, but it didn't, because it made me realize that I wasn't doing this change for myself.
Who are you doing it for?
I was doing it for my partner at the time, right? So I was wanting to do those things with that person because they were so healthy and they were so active, and that person would go on runs and like would go to the gym and traveling, and I couldn't follow, and I couldn't maintain that relationship because of the issues that I had,
right,
mostly related to my eating disorder at that point. So I think moving away and like, you know, moving into another province where I didn't really know anybody, didn't have as much support from my family or friends, I kind of felt like the only world I knew was the party scene. So I just directly went to that, and that's how I met people there. So I think that was a big comeback to my bad habits. And my second rock bottom, which was my last one, I ended up having a burnout trying to keep up with my party scene. And at that point, my eating was better. Wasn't perfect, but you know, I was still working out to lose weight. Like, I was still showing up at the gym to burn the calories that I was wanting to shred, you know? And so I think I was putting so much physical stress on my body from doing drugs, from not nourishing my body as much and working crazy amount of hours trying to like survive on my own. I ended up going through a massive burnout. Couldn't even leave my house to go do groceries. I was unable to drive a car. Like, my body was just completely fried. And that's when I realized that, I mean, at that point I was taking medication to treat my anxiety. So I had to consult and go see a doctor, and obviously shared what the issues were, that obviously drugs were definitely a problem. And at that point, from then on, I never touched any drugs afterwards. I realized at that point, like, what kind of impact that it had gave me. And I started realizing that, like, I wanted to be able to work out and have the strength to do particular movements or going out for a certain amount of distance run. I started kind of shifting my mindset. And I think that was the most amazing moment of my life still at this point, that I just, that rock bottom was scary as hell, but I survived it and I kind of came back so much stronger. And I think it definitely shows now in my line of work, because that's definitely like put me in a situation at work where I understand eating disorder, people that have eating disorder, not necessarily of losing weight, but you know, they're eating too much, they're still not feeling comfortable with their body, or people that do consume drugs on weekends and are trying to keep up with their physical activities, that I can relate and I can be honest with my clients. So I think that rock bottom really taught me a lot. So yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny, because looking at you now, obviously I didn't know all that. And a lot of people that know you today don't know that probably.
Yeah.
And looking at you today, that's like, wow, how could this fit person have had that kind of history? You know, it's amazing, but we don't really know, just by looking at people, what someone's been through. I think that's a lesson, is that, you know, even somebody in the perfect bill of health has maybe come from, you don't know what their journey is like. So
yeah, exactly.
Thanks for sharing. And
I think, like, looking at people that I've trained or people that I know, such strong individuals, such strong athletes, like, I think a lot of them have had either a bumpy background, they all have a history, or a reason that's gives them strength, to really like show up and do their training. Mm-hmm. And I find that so beautiful, and I see it every day, and I feel like there's, I think 90% of the people that I've trained in the past don't know my story, but for some reason they feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable in front of me and share their stories. And I think that definitely helps me to be the coach that I always dreamed to be, you know? So.
Mm, for sure. So where does somebody get help when they're in those situations? Like, how do you reach out for help, and where do you go for help?
So there's definitely many options, and I feel like everybody lives it very differently. It's funny because, like, my addiction and my eating disorder, I needed two kind of help. So, like, in terms of, like, my addiction, I felt comfortable enough to maybe tell my parents that I wasn't feeling super well and, like, things that I might be doing. But relating to my eating disorder, like, I wasn't able, like, they obviously, like, wanting to help me throughout the whole process of this, but I refused their help. Like, it was so aggressive on their part. So it's like, it's hard for parents to help some, or their kid with an eating disorder, because they're seeing their kid, like, disappear in front of them, you know? So it's like, I would go to dinners at my parents' house, and I would feel so much anxiety because they were trying to feed me so much food, and I would come home and be even more sick. So, like, I mean, your family is definitely people that you can reach out, but it depends, like, how comfortable you obviously are with them and how they react to it. I think friends, your partner, are definitely a second option, and, like, medical help, there's phone lines. I mean, my biggest thing for me to go see a psychiatrist, that eventually guided me to go see a nutritionist. And it was like a step-by-step, you know, you can go at your clinic and ask for help. Like, they'll give you, phone numbers, they'll give you references. So I think it really depends on what you feel comfortable and where you're at in your journey at that point. but for me, definitely the psychology part of it definitely made a huge difference, because I had gone to see nutritionists, so many different nutritionists, and that for me was such an aggressive way to deal with it. I needed to talk and like sort through my mind and understand why I was doing all these things to my body before I can actually go and like go on a nutritional plan, you know? So it was a step by step. And I think everybody, like, you know, it's a trial period. And, you know, like, I think my biggest thing is, if you try something and it doesn't work, don't just turn around and go back to where you were before. Like, give yourself, like, write it on a piece of paper, you know, give yourself 5 options. I'm going to talk to my parents. Okay, that didn't work. I'm going to go to the closest clinic and ask for help. I didn't feel like they were supportive. All right, let me go and try to connect with a psychiatrist. So, you know, you can make your list and check them off. And like, if you put all the options there, one of them is going to come out positive, but definitely like, don't try one and turn around. And it's definitely easy to do that because it's scary. Like, a lot of people with eating disorder and like drug problems don't necessarily understand the gravity of where they are. So it's hard to be like, okay, you know what? I could just turn around and go back to it. But yeah, I think there's a lot of options out there for sure.
Yeah. More than we know. And I think with the world of the, you know, the internet and everything, mm-hmm. it's been around for a while, but it also provides a lot of resources for people.
Yeah. And even like, especially with social media now, like, go talk to a stranger, someone that you might been exchanging with on social media, and like, you know, reach out to them. Look, I'm going to open my heart to you. And I just need someone to talk to, and you don't have to reply. And I don't want you to judge me, but I need to put this out there to someone because I feel alone. Like, there's so many options. Like, there's so many people out there to help you. Mm.
I was going to ask why, because you grew up in Montreal area, yeah. greater area. There's Saint-Lazare you grew up in?
Vaudreuil,
Saint-Lazare?
Yeah.
And why was it Vancouver that you decided to go to? Because it was the furthest place from here in Canada, or
it's like opposite of Canada. I mean, so my dad's family is in Vancouver, and we've always went back and forth. Me and my aunt lives in Vancouver, are really close, and she's probably the closest person to my heart. She's like the person that I can talk to, and I know she's always there to listen. And I actually at that time was working for Aldo. I was just finishing school in fashion marketing. And I got a job opportunity. Like, I've had the possibility to move there, and I've always told my dad that I wanted to move there eventually. And so like, when I had the opportunity, I just took it. So I moved there to be a store manager, and eventually like got promoted shortly after I moved there. So I think it was an easy way out for me. I just wanted to run away. I think till very recently, that was a pattern of mine. I just, you know, if something doesn't go well and I don't want to face it because it's too scary, I'll just run away from it. So that's pretty much the reason why I moved there. I had work stability, moving in the most beautiful city, in my opinion, and being closer to my family. That was pretty much the reason why I moved there.
Mm, and yeah, good move. I like going to visit there a few times. I'm like, this is perfect.
It's so stunning
for a runner to yeah. be like
in the trails or just running on the street on the seawall. So beautiful.
Yeah, because it's almost like I always describe it as if you condense the space between like Tremblant and Montreal. Like, if you close that gap, that's what Vancouver looks like to me. When you're in the city, you can look up
the mountains. Yeah,
see the mountains.
First apartment was right on the beach, and it was just like the most amazing experience. Like, waking up and just going down for runs by the seawall, like, it was incredible. The energy of the water in the mountains it's just so powerful.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And like Kitsilano, and like, I don't know too much, but running on this, like, I ran series there a few times, a Lululemon half marathon. Yeah. And I'm like, this is the best. Yeah. Like, this is really amazing. This is amazing. You mentioned Aldo. So that's like a huge, again, of another period in your life. Like, that's so different than what you do today.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? Like, I of course, like, that kind of office job provides kind of stability for you, which is a nice perk to have. Mm-hmm. But how did, like, why did it go from that to fitness?
So I guess, like, fitness kind of saved me for a while. And coming back to my first rock bottom story, like, that partner that I had helped me get back on my feet. And I started running at that point, and I started going to the gym. And at that point, it wasn't for the right reason. I obviously was running and training to, like, stay skinny. I guess, like, when I actually moved to Vancouver, I, like, joined a gym, and I started training with a trainer, and I started doing CrossFit, and I started running more and signing up for races. And although, like, I wasn't at my ultimate, like, peak of, like, fitness level, like, I wasn't necessarily healthy, I started actually enjoying it, like, the community side of it, going to group classes, going into the gym and just clearing my head out, lifting some heavy weights by myself, going out for runs for hours on the side of the water. Like, it really helped me with my mental health mostly. And then eventually, like, gave me a reason to stay clean, and it truly just gave me a reason to stay strong. When I shifted my mindset of, like, okay, I'm going to train for, like, giving myself a purpose for my training, it, like, changed everything for me. So when I actually had my burnout, I was on a 6-month leave from Aldo. I always, like, really loved fashion, which is why I went into that program, and loved working for Aldo. I love my job. I mean, you know how passionate I am in everything that I do and I touch. So I obviously was, like, overworking myself, and was there, like, from 6 a.m. to, like, past 10 every night, you know? Like, I lived so close to my store that I would just walk there even when I wasn't working. So obviously the burnout came from a lot of different places. When I did burn out, I started realizing that I wasn't necessarily happy at work. Like, it wasn't giving me the feeling that I used to have for my job. And I just told my dad, like, look, I've been so passionate about this whole fitness thing. And he knew about it, you know, like, when he called me, and he was like, oh, you're having a bad day. Are you going to go and run? Or are you going to, like, do something to be active to boost yourself up? Like, that was, like, the main reason why I went and did that. So throughout this whole 6 months, I signed up at Douglas College, and I did a program for strength conditioning, personal training program. And I just loved it. Like, I was so into it. So when my leave was finished, I ended up going back to work, demoted myself, just was an assistant manager in store, started working at a restaurant, eventually left Aldo, and just gave everything I had in my training school, and started spinning and started, like, having my own clients. And I just loved it so much. So when I actually moved to Montreal a couple of years later, I decided to just quit everything else and just give it my 100%. So I didn't want to do anything else than that. So, yeah, now I'm, like, I'm a strength conditioning coach. I'm a head coach at Orange Theory, soon to be a regional trainer for them. So I'm going to be training their coaches around the region. I'm a Pilates instructor, spinning. I do everything, and I just love it so much. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a resume you have. You do everything. You're, like, super.
You're like, what do you do? I do everything.
It's like, what does Val do? People ask me, what does Val do? I said, well, you have a minute? Because I gotta. Can you sit down for a second?
Yeah.
But it's super cool. I mean, I think that's just the way that industry is. If you want to, like, survive, you got to kind of be multi-dimensional.
Yeah.
Or specialize, but you are very good at what you do. And I tell you all the time, but when I see you talking to people or interacting with your clients, the ones I've met anyways, their faces light up. You give everything you have to them, and they appreciate it. You know, you're really making an impact in the community. And, you know, I'm sure you get, a high out of it, a new high out of it, as much as they are.
Yeah. I mean, like, I do what I do to help people, and like, I think every coach is there for a reason. And a lot of people I surround myself in the industry kind of have the same purpose. You know, they want to help people in terms of like their physical and mostly mental health. Like, I work for different studios, and like, that's their motto. You know, like, we're not like, I don't like, obviously love seeing physical change in my clients. But like, being able to change people's lives is so rewarding. Like, my first couple of clients when I moved to Montreal, I had three clients that were dealing with mental health issues. And one of them actually was on a leave from work. She has not been able to work for almost 3 years. And like, that rock bottom I hit after being on like a sick leave from Aldo, like not being able to leave my house, like that was her for all that time. And, you know, we train 4 times a week, and probably only one time of that week we would actually train. Like, I was there to help her on all the different levels. And like, she just did her sprint, like her first sprint triathlon last year. Like, that for me is like incredible. Like, I just want to like lift people up and change their life. And I, you know, it's really great. I mean, I can't be happier. Like, I would never see myself doing anything else.
Well, you're good at it, so I hope you don't change anytime soon. You mentioned running early on to kind of shift your focus or to get out of the house. And I mean, obviously, like, running's meant different things for you.
Yeah.
And you're still running. You're still training. But what did it mean to you early on? And then how has that evolved over time?
I mean, at first, it was really just a way to just kind of keep the weight off my body. And then, like, a couple years on the road was just really to keep myself sane, you know. Like, I would do it first thing in the morning. I'm a morning person. So, like, before I would go to work, I would go by the water and run. And, like, at that time, I never really had, like, I didn't put myself in a training program in terms of running. Like, I would just go out there and run by feeling. And, you know, if I was out for 10 minutes or if I was out for an hour or 2 hours, like, it really didn't matter at that point. It was really just to clear my head, you know. Like, I would find myself running and crying sometimes, or running and laughing. It was, at that point, was just really for my mental health. Now, I mean, running is probably the only training that I focus on for myself. And like, I mean, my training volume is quite high. Like, I teach about 10 to 12 spin classes a week, plus the Pilates classes that I have to do with the members, and this strength conditioning class that I have to demo all day. Like, I'm on my feet moving like 10 to 14 hours a day. But like, that time that I will take for myself to go out and do my training for my own goals, to like, let's say, like, now training for a marathon. It's really the only time I have to treat myself. Like, it's, if I don't have that, I feel like I'm letting myself go. It keeps me going, keeps me motivated. And like, if I don't have that, I feel like I don't have a purpose.
Right. Do you feel like, I mean, I can completely relate to that. Like, running is a big part of my life too. And like, finding that out about you was exciting, because I'm like, oh, like, built-in training buddy. This is great.
Yeah. Like, although we don't really train together that much.
I know. I mean, yeah, like, we try to, but I think, especially now, like, it's nice to get our headspace when we're out running.
Yeah.
And running alone is sometimes fun, but running together is sometimes fun. It's like a balancing act at the moment, but which I find great. But do you feel like where you've come from has helped you build some mental toughness for marathon training and maybe just running a marathon in general?
Yeah, for sure. It's funny because I was thinking about that today, because I went for running and it didn't go so well. Like, I actually like find myself like struggling. And I think that's like probably my favorite thing about the training. Like, and it's funny because when we first met, you're like, oh, the race is just like the celebration of your training. And I can really relate to that. Like, I find myself like hitting a lot of rock bottom on my training, like, probably more than like great runs, you know, like it's rare that my body's recovered and I feel like fresh, because I normally like have three hours minimum of activity, like intense activity throughout my day. So like going out and be like, damn, today is like, my legs feel like a sack of brick, or like, I don't think I can finish this. You know, I think that for me is like coming back to like rock bottom moments, you know, like I made it through that. Like I can get through the next like 8K of my run, you know, like get it together. You got this. I think it definitely made me a stronger athlete. You know, like even like going for spin class at 7 PM when I've been working all day, I'm like, ugh, again, but like I get on my bike and I just like destroy it. So I think, I recenter my energy. Like when I'm out there and I try to pick myself up, sometimes it's harder than others. And I think everybody can relate to that. No matter what this distance you're doing. But I think definitely my past has definitely helped me like gather all my thoughts and be like, okay, you got this. And even if I don't finish my run, I'm going to try to go later, or like, you know what? It's okay. Like, don't beat yourself up. You've had worse days. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you have such a physical job, like, I think that's, I mean, something I really admire about you is that you have such a physical job. You're always using your body. It's very easy to miss, you know, you have to give yourself to what you're doing physically and mentally.
Yeah.
Because you're a coach, you're a cheerleader. You're also doing the workouts with people. So it's like, how do you bring that energy back to yourself to be able to complete trainings? Like, is there any tricks that you use for yourself, or like verbal cues that you give yourself? I hear them always giving to other people, but to get yourself out the door.
It's hard. I find it hard to like cheer myself up. Like I'm not a group, like when I run, like I run alone most of the time. And like, because it's the only time a day I usually have for myself. Like, I know for you, like it's definitely a pick me up for you to go running with people. And it definitely is even for me, like, you know, like if I go and join people, it definitely like scoops me back up. But most of the time I don't really want to be around people when I'm running. So I guess a lot of the time when I'm struggling, I'll stop, or I'll keep going. But like, I think my biggest is like, I'll stop my legs. I stop moving, and I'll put my hand on my heart, and I'll just like close my eyes and take like two deep breaths. And I'll just tell myself like, get it together. You got this. I think that's my phrase for even for other people. One of my clients made a shirt and it says, you got this on it. So,
isn't like, there a shirt with your face on it that your clients
made?
Yeah,
that's another one.
Yeah.
we have a couple of great, items out there with my face, and my favorite quotes. but yeah, I think that is definitely one of my biggest way to like pick myself back up. Like I'll just like recenter, and like, sometimes I'll just like start speeding up and trying to get my heart rate up a bit, and just be like, okay, if you can do this like 400 meter faster, you can finish your run. Like, just like, I think it's, I kick myself in the butt quite a bit to, I'm not really like a, oh, like spiritual. And like, I'm like, hey, just get it together and keep going, keep moving.
Get your shit together. Let's go.
Yeah, seriously.
I mentioned it in the intro, like, you've shown me the importance of cross training, and I see you working out and how strong you are. And I had to do 50 push-ups the other day, which I completed, but it was a struggle. Yeah, and I'm still sore 3 days later. But what can you say about cross training? Like, you have that background in strength and conditioning. How important is it for runners, being a runner yourself and also being a coach?
I mean, it really depends for everybody. Like for myself, related to last year's training, which was a rough one for me. Like I started my marathon training a little later, and I just kind of gave up everything. I was just spinning and running. I usually do a lot of strength training, especially throughout my running training. And I found myself coming up with a lot of boo-boos. Like I was having a lot of hip pain. I was actually having issues contracting my glutes, and I think it really depends for everybody, but I think it's cross training is very important, in my opinion, but I think everybody has their own say on that. And not just like, you know, cross training is training muscles in different muscles, or training your muscles that you use, but in different ways. So, you know, like we're running forward. So maybe trying to do lateral work. I think that is amazing, especially for activating like glute muscles in terms of like runners. It's a big thing. A lot of people have a hard time with that. Your core, like I find like Pilates is definitely like a great mix for runners, and a lot of heavy lifts. Like I think it's a great thing to definitely add to your training, even if it's like one time a week or you only have like 30 minutes, you know, like try to get it done. And like, don't be shy to reach out to someone that maybe have more knowledge around about that, because you might just like be doing like, you know, simple movements, but that are not necessarily like improving what you need to improve on in your cross training. So, yeah.
With the current state of the world right now, and the fact that we're all at home pretty much with the coronavirus and all this stuff, what are like maybe your top three exercises that we could do from home as runners to strengthen ourselves? Because I think this at this time, it's an opportunity for us to build that base back up. We have so much time. We have nothing to train for because everything's been postponed. Heck, the Olympics have been postponed now. All our races have been put on hold. So I'm thinking like, hey, now's the time to get strong, to work on easy running, volume running, without putting too much pressure on my workouts. So what are your like top three exercises for runners at home that they could do?
I mean, like, let's see, if I have to pick three, I'll probably pick like core and lower body. So a lot of lateral work. So you can do like some agility stuff. So like some skater lunges. So like from side to side jumps, or doing some elevated like box or chair stand. So putting one foot on your on a step or stairs, and just lifting yourself up through your dominant leg, just trying to work onto your hamstrings, your glutes. So some eccentric core exercises. So like you can just hold a plank, try to work on your breathing, which is extremely important, especially in your running, trying to really contract and lift through the diaphragm when you're breathing. So just holding a plank is very basic, but there's so many different ways that you can like make your plank harder without even adding any movement. Or even just laying on your back and lifting your legs up and down, just creating that core activation. Like these three basic movement, I think for me are like great. You know, but you got some dynamic, you got some really slow micro movement through that leg lift and doing some core activation. I think those are definitely three really good exercises that you could do at home.
Nice. I think I'm going to do them right after we get off this interview.
But yeah, you don't need equipment. So it's like pretty simple, you know, find us like a little stool or a stair, you know, like it's, you don't need much space or equipment. So
finding that out for sure. What are some, like, I know we're not racing right now, like you wanted to run Ottawa and doesn't look like that's going to be happening, but what for future plans, what would you like to run next, or what are your goals in running?
So I'm actually like, I had the Ottawa. We haven't been confirmed that it's canceled, but it probably will. I actually am signed up for Le Petit Train du Nord as well at the end of the summer.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, like, we've talked about this as well. Like, I was like, I don't really want to stop my training. So I think just maybe reducing the intensity of my workouts is what I'm going to be doing. But I think I want to keep up, like, especially with all this time and I'm not spinning as much. I want to keep going and I want to keep working on my volume. It's definitely like a plus for me because I'm so rested.
Yeah,
I can actually get out there and move my body and it feels good, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely, like you said, in this time, getting out there while we still can really helps the mental and just gets you out of your four walls. And I can't say that I've appreciated running as much as I appreciate it right now. I can say, like, this morning I went for a run, and I don't know, I had a moment of clarity, I'd say, is that, you know, for the last little while I've been training for something. It's always been, you know, enjoying the process, but training for something, having something on my mind. And I've kind of set a challenge for myself to run like 10K, inspired by Jeff. He was a former McGregor. He's a former guest on the show as well and a good friend. And he was doing 20K a day. And I'm like, okay, maybe 20 is a little crazy, but let me do 10. And it's just for me.
Yeah.
It's just to get in a different kind of headspace and for the pure enjoyment of it. Like, I feel like I'm really enjoying the running now. And maybe it's because it's the only thing that I can do outside the house, but other than walk the dog, but it's really been a nice, I had a nice moment. Have you kind of experienced that in running at all since the changes? And
I just, like, I think 100%, like, it's definitely feels different to be out there running. But to be honest, for me, like I'm on week two of being at home. I won't even say stuck at home, because I mean, we're still able to go outside at this point. But I think for me, like, the biggest thing is that I actually, like, I'm so used to interacting with people, and I don't have to do that. Like, I don't have to do it at all. Like, I have so much time to be in my headspace even throughout the whole day. So when I go out, I actually find myself, like, enjoying it in different ways, in terms of, like, I'm productive. I'm doing productive thinking when I'm running, which usually I just run with nothing in my mind. So I think I'm living my running routine a little differently right now, which has been quite interesting.
And as a trainer, like you were talking about, like, all the things that you do now, the training's changed for you quite a bit. So how have you adapted to the adjustment of being at home and still being able to reach out to your community? Like, I know how important they are to you and how important you are to them. So how do you maintain that?
I think the first week was pretty quiet. I'm starting to do private sessions with my clients on FaceTime. A lot of my studios are putting on some live stream classes. So we're really trying to reach out to the community in different ways. I'm getting a lot of, like, messages from my clients that are just kind of reaching out to kind of open their heart on how they're feeling. So just, like, I'm finding myself being there for them on a different level, which is pretty beautiful. I think everybody's finding ways to connect with people in different ways, and, like, connecting with people like you would never think you would connect. Like, I was talking to a friend, and, you know, she's been exchanging with this person on social media, just as like a friend, you know, just commenting on each other's posts. And now they're FaceTiming every 2 days, you know, like, being there for each other. So I think, in my opinion, like, I think this is going to change the way the community is. I think this whole live stream is amazing. I'm finding I'm struggling with, maybe it's saturated. Like, there's so many videos out there, a lot of people that are not necessarily coaches are posting workouts, which I think is great, because they're still getting people moving. But I think on a coach perspective, it's been challenging, because, you know, this is our job. This is the only way that we make money. We connect with our people. I've talked to a couple of coaches, and I feel like maybe we're struggling sharing that space and sharing our coach responsibilities with people that aren't normally coaches. So I think these are the shifts, especially throughout these times.
Yeah, I think it's great that what you've been able to do with your clients and doing one-on-one trainings, and I've seen you also doing these spin classes through your work as well, either on Zoom, I think on Zoom actually. And it's still a nice way to stay connected with the community, even though they're at home, and it's giving them some kind of purpose and allowing them to connect still. So I think even though we're cooped up at home, we can still feel connected in some capacity. And I'm finding even with La Rundown doing some live streaming with former guests and stuff, it's helped to, you know, give people entertainment or, you know, connect with people and find out how they're doing. And it's a different landscape at the moment, but together we're able to, if we can stick together, we can kind of get through this, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's great that people are moving in spaces they're not necessarily used to moving. Like, I don't ever work out at home. Like, it's the last thing I want to do when I come home. And I know a lot of clients of mine, like, are working out in their living room, and that's not something they would have ever imagined doing. And you're seeing so many people running outside. Like, it's crazy. And it's amazing. I think, I hope that people will hold some of those habits even when mm-hmm. things get back to normal. I really hope that people are finding new passion, maybe either for running or, you know, if you're used to doing a lot of heavy lifts and you're taking like Pilates classes online or, you know, like different high intensity classes. I hope people learn to love different types of training and see what kind of benefit it will bring in their specifics, you know, like if I'm a power lifter and I start doing a little bit more core Pilates, like your lifts are going to be so much stronger. The base of that foundation is going to be incredible and come back, you know?
Right.
So I hope people hold in a lot of those new habits.
Yeah, me too. For sure. I know. Hopefully I will too. Like, I'm looking at myself, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm doing this stuff now, but when things get back to normal, I hope I can also maintain that. Having that fitness background and also starting when you started up running, did you find that you were stronger for it? Did you have any struggles? Like most of the time when you start running, you have aches and pains and stuff like that. Is there any, because you had kind of like an overall liking for fitness or that general fitness maybe was a bit higher than normal people? You find that it helped your running early on and like kept you from maybe being injured?
So I actually never got any injuries till like last year, which I think was me not listening to my body and just kind of not realizing that spinning twice a day plus doing high volume training in terms of running was maybe a little too much on like 4 or 5 hours of sleep. But I think in the past, like when I first started running, like setting myself goals, like, you know, running my first 10K or doing my first half marathon. The only thing I've ever had in terms of injuries were shin splints. I think I had the stamina to go out there and run for the distance that I wanted. But I think I wasn't conscious of, or I wasn't really letting my body adjust. Like I would just go and do it, you know, like I remember mm-hmm. my first half marathon, like I think I trained for like 3 weeks and I just like nice. Went for it. And I had like chronic shin splints. Like I was in so much pain, like walking was so difficult. So I think because my body was like, so like my body had the strength and the stamina from all the other stuff that I was doing, I didn't think I knew better. I just like, you know, it's harder to apply sometime on yourself than to give it to someone else. I think it definitely gave me strength, but I wish I had done it better in the past, that I gave myself the time to train properly for those races and like actually realizing how much I love training more than race day, you know, like mm-hmm. now the training process is the thing that I can't wait. You know, when I finish my race last year, like I was injured for a while, like I was out from running for almost maybe 5-6 months. Mm-hmm. And like, I couldn't wait to just like get back in a routine and having it in my calendar and being like, okay, this is what I'm doing this week. This is the volume. This is the distance that I'm doing. So yeah, I think the training definitely helped, but I think I did it wrong completely when I first started.
And so much of what you talk about too is rest as well. Like, how do you do that with the schedule that you have? What are some, with someone with a super busy schedule, when you're always moving, how do you recover?
I think learning from last year, because I think it was the year prior to 2 years ago, I actually didn't spin throughout my whole like training season. Like I wasn't teaching spinning at that time for that period. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was still on my feet, but I was definitely, my body was so rested. So I actually had a really good training season. And like, even after my race, like I felt great. Last year was challenging because I definitely I beated my body up. Like I was training 3-4 hours a day, like high intensity training. Like I was just going at it like a crazy person. And you know, I wake up at 4:30 in the morning and I don't necessarily come home from work till 10, sometime 10:30. So I'm not getting sometimes more than 5 hours of sleep, which could be fine if I wasn't training as much. So my body's not recovering. I'm eating a lot as much as I possibly can. So I think that's definitely helped. But I think like merging last year and the year before together, realizing like, you know, taking notes, like journaling about it and realizing what went wrong and what was good. Learning from my mistakes, like this year, when my race come like closer to my race, I've let my work know that like I'm not going to be teaching spinning, like allowing my body to rest on those higher volume weeks, leading close to my race, to be able to recover, and adjusting my schedule when I know like I schedule my runs properly. You know, if I have to wake up at 4:30 in the morning and I know I'm going to be out train like working till 9:30 at night, like that might not be a great day to do a long run, you know?
Right.
So, or a workout. So I'll go on an easy run, just get those legs moving. And so it's really like taking the time to program my runs and like listening to my body. Like there's days where I feel fantastic, even if I got 2 classes. So like, you know what? I might move something. Like my schedule was set, but let me look at my schedule and see if I can move, my easy run on a day that I might be feeling a bit more fatigued. And like being a woman, you know, hormonal change, that's a thing. So adjusting, you know, I have pretty painful cramps throughout this period, like to the point where I can't really work like at some point. So like, I know when it's coming and like I adjust, you know, like that might not be a day where I want to be running. So I might take 2 days off back to back instead of splitting them out. So I think just for people that are out there with crazy amount of hours on their work schedule, and if they have a very active life in general, I think just planning is definitely key. Like plan your training. Like yeah. I love seeing like on Sunday night, I look at my week schedule and like, I love seeing my runs in there, but like, I know that I might have to move them. Right. So just waking up and listening, but just be careful to what you're listening to your body. Like sometimes your body's like, oh, I'm tired, but you could still get on there. Like get your legs moving and see how you actually feel. You might feel better than if you just decided to not go running, you know?
Mm-hmm. What was your progression like as a runner, and like when did you start running the like longer distances? Because I find marathon running is super tough, and like I ran halves for 5 years before I even thought about running a marathon. When did you get into the longer distance, and how long was that progression for you?
I did my first half marathon with my aunt in LA, the nice. Long Beach Marathon. She's done Boston three times. She was actually there the year that they had the bombing. So she's always been like my role model in terms of fitness. Like she's like, you know, she's the same age as my parents, but she's so active and she's so dedicated to her training. So I think it's been 3-4 years. And then I did my half marathon and I just like jumped into the longer distance. I felt good. The half marathon that like, I obviously didn't push. Like, I think till I met you, I realized like how running an actual half, like a half marathon, running a full marathon at like your full, capacity, like what it actually means. Like my first half marathon, I just like strolled, you know, like I remember crossing the finish line. And the guy on the microphone calling out my name and like where I was from and said like, and she's not even sweating. Like I was just like, I was strolling. it felt good. And like I was obviously there to do it with my aunt. Like the whole point of this was to obviously give it a try. And like, we actually didn't end up running together because she had an injury. She still showed up and did it. She had plantar fasciitis. She didn't train for like 8 weeks before leading to the race, but she still showed up and did it. But yeah, I think like, yeah, it was definitely like from there on, I was like, hey, let's give it a try and see if I can do the training, like for the full marathon. And it's a struggle. Like even last year at the end of this season or throughout the season, I had a really rough time last year. And like, I was like, you know what, maybe full marathons aren't for me. Like I maybe like running 42K plus everything I'm doing is too much, you know, like maybe it's not the right time or it's just not for me right now. But like, I love going for long runs. Like I love being out there and it gives me so much joy, and I'm sure I could adapt and adjust, like if I decided to just train for half or even for tens. But I love it. And like on race day, just being out there for that long, like it's just great.
It's a great feeling, right? Yeah. It's like that runner's high. But I think even for me, like running marathons for the last few years now, taking a decision to focus on the short stuff, I think the more I talk to the runners, the more I realize how much of a benefit that can really actually be, because the marathon's such a grind, you know. It's such a running 42, it's like it's the real deal. It's like, I know a lot of people run a lot longer than 42K. Like you get some trail races that are much longer than that, but like you said, to give your all for 42 kilometers, it takes a lot out of you for sure. And it's a mental game as much as anything. Are there any things any mantras that you give yourself when you're out there in a race? Like how do you prepare for, let's say, a marathon? Not the training. Like we know that like the training is such a process, but like, what are some things that you go through leading up to the day, and how do you handle the distance yourself?
I think leading up to the race, I usually become quite a mess. I get so nervous. I feel like the night before my race, like I just like, it's like having an exam, you know, like I just get so nervous. I think it changes for every race, you know, like as an example, like last year I did Ottawa half and I was going to actually race that one, but I ended up, there was some family stuff. So I ended up losing my cousin like maybe 2 weeks before the race. And like that laid heavy, like physically on me. Like I was like unable to leave my bed, and obviously like I wasn't going out running. I still wanted to go out there and do it. But I was definitely like not prepared. So like, I think that for that race and the race and at the end of the summer when I did Montreal full, like that was in my mind. I don't think I had any like mantras. Like I think just, you know, like having her with me and reminding myself, you know, like my cousin had some mental health issues and that's why she passed. And I think reminding myself like how much strength I needed to complete this race and how much strength I've given her. And, you know, I just wanted to be strong and finish this race for my cousin basically. But in the past, I mean, I think it really changes for every race. Like I think my first full, like I just went in there and was like, okay, like I set myself a goal and I just wanted to get it. So I just like kept repeating that number in my head when I was running, which is probably not the best thing to do. But at that point, like that was what worked and kept me going. Mm-hmm. So I think I think everybody will have their own way to push themselves on race day. But for me, it really changes like where I'm at in my life and what's happening at that moment is definitely what's going to motivate me to push harder and to get me to finish the race when everything starts to hurt, you know?
Yeah. And it does start to hurt in a marathon.
Yeah. 100%. So much.
What's your favorite running moment?
Like when, like throughout the race or?
No, like in your running experience, what's been your highlight so far? Is there a race that stands out, a medal that you like?
I actually think like last year's full in Montreal was probably my biggest highlight. I mean, you met me at the 30K mark.
Mm-hmm.
My parents surprised me. They weren't going to make it and they ended up being there. And then when I passed them at like 27K, they were like, we won't be able to be at the finish line, but like, we love you. And then when I reached the finish line, they were there, you know? So like, and my best friend was there. My best friend comes to every race of mine and she follows me and I think it's amazing. And my friend Destin as well. And like you had your whole group was there cheering and, you know, I felt like, you know, I had goosebumps, like I was sweating, I was hot, I was hurting, but like, you know, every time I like saw someone that I loved, it was the first time that I had that much support, you know? Usually mm-hmm. my best friend is there and I know she's going to be there. And I think that's always something that I look forward to, like seeing her. I don't know when I'm going to see her. But you know, I know she's going to be at the finish line and I know she's going to be there for me, but like having all these people, it gave me so much energy. And like, I was injured and like, I was like limping and like, I didn't mm-hmm. stop running. I kept on my pace. And like, I think last year's race was definitely my shining moment of running for sure.
Yeah. We were all like very proud of you. It was
hard to watch you. Great day. Yeah. It started late. My legs were already cramping. I was hungry.
Oh yeah.
I didn't have my gels because I left it on my office desk.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. That was a disaster.
Yeah.
what do you like for nutrition now? Like, maybe let's say your pre-race meal and what do you eat during a run, like during a race?
Usually my stomach, like I can eat before running usually pretty well. Like, before race day, I usually have like a bagel or I'll have oatmeal, and keeping it like as simple as possible. So like bagel and jam and a banana. Like I'm fully vegan, so I try to keep it as minimal as possible in terms of like fats and stuff, but yeah, oatmeal or bagel is usually my key. And I take Endurance Dap. You made me try it and I love it. My stomach really appreciates it. And I find it very easy to digest. Like at Montreal full last year, I was like stealing people's fuel, you know. I know you gave me some of yours. I was like, you're only doing a half marathon, I can take yours. But I ended up having to like take some from the race and my stomach was like destroyed. Like it was so sweet and so watery and the things were so big. Like I was just like, it was like everywhere on me. And yeah, I think nutrition throughout the race is really important. I think this year I definitely did it right, but yeah, it's pretty, pretty simple.
Yeah. And I remember you mentioning how like I didn't, because I carried everything on me like nutrition wise. I take 2-3 gels or whatever and that's it, so I don't really see what's on course. But when you were telling me you were grabbing these gels that were like in massive packaging,
I only had one gel.
Yeah,
like I had one Endurance Tap and then I was like ended up having to, like once my injury started being like very intense, like I literally was just in so much pain, tried walking and walking was more painful than running. So, I took that to like boost me up and I almost like vomited. Like it was bad, but at least it was there, you know, it's better than nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Take what you can. Yeah. Take what you can on the day, right?
Yeah.
We talked about like your eating, like the past eating disorder. Like, have you always been vegan or did you make the change when you started getting healthy again?
It definitely, it was throughout the whole process of when I was in school for training. At that point, my eating disorder was pretty stable. Like, I mean, anybody with an eating disorder, it's something that like stays forever. Like I don't think it ever goes away. Mm. It's always going to be in the back of your mind. And for some it's more than for others, you know? I started being vegan because my stomach was very sensitive. And so I went from being like a meat eater to not at all, like in one day. And I was like, you know what? I walked into my work. I worked at a Mexican restaurant and I was like,
the cook was like, hey, you want your chicken taco? And I'm like, no, I'm vegan now. Like, it was just like, it was like one day. And I haven't ate meat since. I like sushi so much. So I do eat sushi once in a while. Like I'll do it. I'll eat the raw fish. But like, I won't go out there like eating chicken, or I haven't touched like meat, like red meat or chicken or whatever. Yeah, I just, for me, it's been like almost 6 years or something. And I like, I don't see my life being different. Like I don't see myself eating meat ever again. Mm. I do find myself being like hungry all the time, but I think that's because I'm moving so much. But I feel like a lot of my clients are like, oh, you're vegan. How do you like do all you, how are you able to maintain like your nutrition while doing all these activities while you're vegan? And I'm like, the protein thing is definitely always the first comment that people pass. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
For almost a year and a half, I was doing meal prep with this company called Pure Prep in Montreal. And it's all vegan, already made meals, and they deliver it to your house or to your work. And that for me, like, was such a game changer. Like, I didn't have to spend, I don't like cooking, although I'm really good at it.
You're so good at cooking.
I don't like taking the time to do it. So it was really great for me to be able to have that, you know, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and like grab and go. Like, and it's delicious. It's full of great things. And like, it was probably the first year that I was like nourished the way I should have been, you know, throughout my training. So.
Right. Good point.
Yeah.
And I'm vegan too, so it's a good match. We don't struggle with meals or anything like that, or going hungry at all. And we found a vegan sushi place, which is pretty awesome. So
good.
I'm craving some of that right now. But if you haven't tried it and you're in Montreal, Momo Sushi is impeccable. It's so good. I was going to ask you, like, because you mentioned that when you have an eating disorder, it never leaves you, you know, but I see you eating all the time and you're always hungry and all that stuff. But does it still affect you in a different kind of way, or?
I mean, it's really the way I think. I actually gave a little seminar to high school kids. When I first moved to Montreal, regarding eating disorder and physical activity and good healthy habits, and that was definitely one of the things that I put a lot of focus on. And I think like a lot of people that didn't experience eating disorder just think that it's something that can just be fixed, but like it's a mental health thing, you know. So I personally, like, it's stable for me, but I still go through, like, you know, last year I went through a small little relapse, you know, like I wouldn't make myself sick, but I was injured, wasn't training as much. And I physically, your body image is something that, like, for me, like, it's right away. It's affecting me. And I won't necessarily do something about it now because I'm stronger and I'm smarter about it. And I'm not there anymore. But it's definitely something that, like, when I look at myself in the mirror, I don't particularly see myself in the way that, other people see me, you know? And I think a lot of women and men suffer from that. And it might not lead them to having, eating disorder, but I think body shaming yourself is a thing that a lot of people do. And a lot of people react differently. So for me, that's all that stayed. Like, I won't go and, you know, like, make myself vomit after a meal or starve myself. I know I need the fuel to wake up and do my job the next day. So I think for me, that's really like what keeps me going. And I think I've learned and I'm past that. But I think in the past, like, even when I was eating okay, I was definitely like, I still had it in the back of my head. And I have a lot of clients that have that. So, yeah.
But at least it's something you've faced and you can relate to. So that can bring you even closer to your clients, I'm sure.
Yeah. And a lot of people, it's funny because I said this out loud at one point at work and people kind of gave me like this stinky eye. I was like, I think it was last year. It was like the end of my training season. And like, I was like tiny, you know, I was running and spinning so much. I was you know, it's the summer, it's hot, and you know, my body fat percentage wasn't necessarily like where I wanted it. And now I'm like, oh, I'm too skinny. Like I reach a point where I'm like, ugh, like I look weak, you know? So I was in the hallway at work, and there was members around, and I said, oh, I wish I could just put like, I wish I could just be more voluptuous right now. Like put some weight on me, you know, like everything I eat just goes through me. Mm-hmm. And people like know this about me. If I'm not teaching, I'm eating.
Yeah.
It's one or the other. And like, I had one person like message me on Instagram being like, how dare you saying this? Like how insulting it is, because this person is on the heavier side. And like, you know, like it's not, being skinny and asking to be bigger shouldn't be shamed, you know, like, mm-hmm. Like, look at this skinny person wanting to gain more weight. Actually, you know what? You don't know my background. For me to say this out loud is actually a big step forward. So, or people that are on the heavier side being like saying out loud, like how they like love their body and like their curves. And it's still something that like, I'm sure people in the back of their mind are like, or could take as a joke, you know, that are like, okay, yeah. Okay. Like, right. Like you actually think what you're saying out loud. I think loving your body and like wishing for me to gain more weight or someone that is on the heavier side to love who, what they look like, I think shouldn't be judged, mm-hmm. or shamed on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of got to love your body no matter what, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, for sure. And it's hard to teach that to people.
But yeah, for sure. When you're training and stuff, you go through fluctuations. And I think maybe your comment was coming from a point of strength. Like you.
Yeah, exactly. But people don't know my background. So, you know, so the podcast is definitely a step forward for me. But like, mm-hmm. for that person that messaged me, like for me to reach out and explain why I said that and where I was coming from. And then realizing like, oh, damn, like I didn't know this about you. So I think it opens their eyes to different body types. And what these people tell themselves, like talk mm-hmm. about how these people talk about their bodies. Mm-hmm. There's so much judgment on body types and how people talk about their bodies that like, you know, if my client tells me that they feel fat today, my first reaction, and if you're listening and you're my client, you know that I'm going to right away say no body shaming. It's like straight up line. But like, why do you feel like that? You know, maybe you're, you know, if you're a woman, you're getting your period, or, you know, if you're coming back from an injury, your training is not as your training volume is not as much. So let's try to accept what's happening and try to understand like why we're gaining that weight. Then this new weight might give you more strength in the future, you know? So I think digging deeper in like body talk is definitely one of my biggest strengths when it comes to people like shaming their body. Mm-hmm. But it's, I think a lot of coaches out there and a lot of friends don't necessarily take the time to do that. They're like, ugh, stop saying that you're fat, or, you know, like, where is it coming from? And how can we like make this, say it better, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Make people feel comfortable talking about it too. Yeah. I think that's, if you don't talk about stuff, you never understand kind of where that person's point of view is. And I'm sure like after talking to that person that made that comment, you found out where they were coming from, and they found out really quickly where you were coming from too. So it helps clear mm-hmm. the air and maybe stigmas that go along with it. My question was going to be, what's some advice you would give to somebody who's starting running or starting to get fit or trying to make a positive change in their life? What advice would you give them?
I think like just finding yourself a goal, and as like, it could be, you know, just, it could be from just going out there and I'm like, I want to get more fit. Like, okay, well, I'm going to commit to 2 times a week, or I'm going to try to train for 5K, or, you know what, I want to train so I can get strong enough to feel confident to step into a group class. You know, I think goal setting is extremely important. I think training without a goal, it's harder to maintain. So I think, yes, goal setting, and don't be shy to ask for help. Like, if you follow someone that's a coach, like, don't be shy to ask questions. Like, we're not going to charge you. Like, don't be shy. Or that person might just even just tell you to come and meet them. And, you know, or right now we obviously can't meet, but, you know, like, hey, I want to start moving. And like, you know, normally I don't actually work out, but I'm stuck at home and can't work. And I want to start a training regimen. Could you help me? Like, this person might even just FaceTime you and do your first mm-hmm. workouts with you, you know? So don't be shy to reach out for help. Or direction, because I think that's very important. A lot of people start training and they have no idea what they're doing, and then injury starts to happen. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so goal setting and definitely reaching out to people around you.
Do you think like I've heard before that when people set goals, it can also set them up for failure at the same time. And how do you, what are your thoughts on that? And like, how can you separate the two? Because I think setting goals is good, but if you don't know how to set them, you might be setting yourself up for failure, which I think is okay. I think it's great. Yeah. I think it's the only way you learn. And if you for anything you do, I think failure is a really
yeah. A lot of people don't like failure, don't.
What's that?
A lot of people don't like to fail. They right. I would say that like 40% will never come back. You know, so. I think definitely goal setting is hard. People like, you know, they set themselves a goal and they give themselves a time frame for that goal. And I think that is where people fail a lot of time. You know, like I want to lose 40 pounds in like 3 months. Like, okay, well, let's start to think about like what your schedule is like on a normal basis. Like you work 40 hours a week, you have, let's say, kids at home. Your husband's not necessarily, or your partner's not necessarily active. Like, how will you stay motivated to do this by yourself? Okay, so maybe like it's not realistic because I can't be working out every single day. Okay, so the goal setting is definitely complicated for a lot of people, but I think just keeping it simple and like, you know what? Like, I want to run a 5K. I'm not giving myself like a date. I'm just saying that like I want to run a 5K. My dad just did this recently. He runs quite a bit, like on his free time. And he wants to do his 5K in under 30 minutes. And like, he didn't tell himself he was gonna do this in a month, you know, he just wants to get there. So he just started working hard to get there, you know? So I think that's definitely great. But definitely being realistic on your goal is the key thing. So right. If you're just giving yourself a crazy goal, like I've never exercised and I want to go deadlift like a 250 pounds, like, you know what, that might not be the safest thing. And, you know, where, how do you get there? Do you know the basic of the movement? You know, like read about it, study about it before setting yourself a goal, like do your research. It's as mm-hmm. simple as that.
Yeah. Do your homework and
yeah.
find a coach that understands you and what you're going through, yeah. I think is a great lesson that you just mentioned. And yeah, there's so many factors that go into setting goals, and it's not just like putting it on paper. It's like when you talk to coaches, there's so many other factors that play mm-hmm. a part in your life. Like you said, family and work, and, you know, it depends where you live in the world too, like what's accessible to you. And I think that's a really strong point for sure. What do you love most about what you do and your job? Like what does it bring to your life?
There's so many things. I think, can I give three?
Sure. Give as many as you like.
I think one of the most important thing for me is, and the thing I love the most is the sense of a community. I struggled with that when I first moved to Montreal, because in Vancouver, I feel like every studio is so connected. And like the run groups and stuff, I felt like the sense of community there was so much stronger. And like, now I'm starting to see like the scene in Montreal shift a little bit, and it's such a beautiful thing. And I have the chance to work for like amazing studios, you know, like I work for Element Studio, which has like the best vibes and such great owners, and they thrive on community. And working for Lispin, which is a new studio, which we're trying to build this amazing community, working with the other studios, you know, even if they're doing spinning as well, try not to have like that competitive sense there. And then obviously with Orange Theory, like I'm the leader of the community, and when I took that position, that was my first thing on my list, was like, how can I make this studio like thrive and like people connect? And now I see it, and it's such a beautiful thing, and it gets me going, you know, like I show up, and even just working out with our members, and it's community is so important. Second thing, would just be just to help people, feel good in their skin. Feel good mentally. I've repeated this multiple times on this podcast now. Mental health is like my top thing on my list. And I like seeing someone who was like unable to maybe leave their house or didn't really have any friends. I was very introvert, and now that is very extrovert, and, you know, maybe have their first girlfriends or first partners. And, you know, I think building confidence in people and like seeing them progress and seeing the final like product is so rewarding, and it gets me up in the morning. And third thing, it's also, it gets me out of the house. It keeps me on my feet. It gives me a reason to keep in shape and be strong, showing up for these people and having to have the strength to be up on the podium and coach a spin class for 45 minutes while talking and being crazy. I think just those, I don't think the community realizes how they impact in the coaches' lives in terms of their training. Like, I actually found, like, just recently when I stopped working, like, I found myself, like, pulling back on my training, and I was like, ugh, like, what is happening to me? And, like, you know, now I'm, like, going back to coaching classes live online, and I'm like, I have to keep my routine going, you know, for these people. I have to. So I think those are the three things for me that I love about my work.
Those are all great points. And I see it in you every day, and how much the community brings to you. And I know that you bring a lot to the community. It definitely stood out as one of the strong points that you have, and one of your strong qualities, that you're super passionate about what you do, and you definitely don't hold back, because that's just who you are. You give it everything you have, and I think if you put that into your running, you're going to be you already are a superstar, but you're going to get all you're going to hit all your goals
it's hard, honestly. I wish I could just run. You know, like there's weeks where my volume's higher and I still have to go and teach my 12 spin class. And
yeah,
it's funny because one of the owner at Element Net, she's like, you know, you don't have to be on the bike. And I'm like, it just doesn't feel right. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Like you don't have to be like crushing the class with them. And I'm like, I just, I don't feel like I'm there 100% for them if I'm not doing that. So it's definitely hard. Like I'm like, wake up, I'm like, ugh, like I look at my phone and I'm like, I have to do all of this today. Like, how is that humanly possible?
Yeah.
You know, and I've listened to your podcast, you know, and you talk a lot of like pro athletes, and, you know, they don't, a lot of these people don't work, and they're, you know, they're out training for 3 to 4 hours, and that's basically what I'm doing all day. So it's like, and I still have to like work. Like I still do a lot of administration work for my Orange Theory job, and like class planning, my brain still has to work. So like the physical and emotional stress on my body, I feel sometimes it's just overwhelming, and it's hard to keep up, but I love it and I wouldn't change it for anything. So
what's your dream race? If you could pick one race that you want to run, one marathon.
Well, last year I was trying to qualify for Boston. I ended up getting hurt, so I didn't end up doing it. So I definitely want to go to Boston. I think it's like a thing for everybody. I want to like travel through my running, and I think just like I have two of my friends, which are also clients of mine. We run with them sometimes, Vai and Carla. They were supposed to complete their last major. And I think just like traveling through the running, and they make them their like family vacation, I think is amazing. So I think I don't have a particular race that I want to do. But I think just like being able to travel through my running is definitely something that I set myself as a goal.
Yeah, and hopefully we can get back to that soon. Everything happening now with the lockdown and everything is kind of put those dreams to a halt. You know, the Olympics getting pushed to next year and all the races being postponed is definitely a hard one to swallow. But even for myself, having Berlin in September, it's, you know, we'll have to wait and see kind of thing. But hopefully we can get back to a place of normalcy. Yeah. And
I think it's not a terrible thing. I was thinking about it, about all of this today. Like a lot of people that are running half marathons or marathons, like they do it every single year, you know? And like, I think maybe like, you know, if all races are canceled this summer, it's crap. Like it's sad, it's upsetting. And it's not a great news to take in, but you know, like, you know, maybe our training would benefit from it, you know, like maybe trying to see the other side of it. And I think, you know, giving our body the training and not necessarily reaching that final race point might not be a terrible thing to take a year sabbatic, you know?
Sabbatical, yeah.
Sabbatical.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing it as a positive for sure. Yeah. A chance to refocus and get on to think about some other things or pick up some, you know, I'm reading more and stuff like that. So try different stuff. So, but listen, I really appreciate you sitting down and chatting with me. We see each other quite often, but it's still nice to chat and sharing your story with something I've been wanting to do for a while. And I think you have so much to offer in ways of knowledge and experience and everything you do. Where can people find out more about you, Val, and if they need training or find out where to take the next spin class?
I mean, you can find me on Instagram. My Instagram handle just changed. It's coach dot fit pony. It's a joke because my previous Instagram handle was fit point, but everybody read it pony, so I decided to change it to make it easier for everybody. Okay. So yeah, coach dot fit pony is my Instagram, and you can find me at different studios. So I coach at Element in Griffintown and Monklin. I teach at Lispin MTL, which is in TMR, and I also teach at Orange Theory in TMR as well. There's plenty of classes to take with me on the weekly. And if you guys want to move throughout this lockdown, I mean, reach out. I'll be more than happy to get you guys moving in different ways.
So awesome. Thanks again for joining me, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday night at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit our website, iamarunner.ca, and check out their Instagram, at WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.